Good afternoon, everybody. This is the Wednesday afternoon meeting of the Portland City Council on Wednesday, April 19th. Carla, please call the roll.
Here.
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 Here. Here is the statement that we need to read at the beginning of meetings. The purpose of council meetings is to do the city's business, including hearing from the community on issues of concern. In order for us to hear from everyone and to give due consideration to matters before the council, we must all endeavor to preserve the order and decorum of these meetings. To make sure that the process is clear for everyone, I want to review some of the basic guidelines, which I hope will help everyone feel comfortable, welcome, and safe at the meeting, and also ensure that decorum is maintained. People may sign up for public testimony on first readings of reports, resolutions, and ordinances. If you sign up, your testimony must address the matter being considered at the time. Please state your name for the record. We don't need your address. And if you're a lobbyist, please disclose that. And if you're part of an organization, that's also helpful to know. Individuals have 3 minutes to testify unless otherwise stated. When you have 30 seconds left, the yellow light's going to light up. And when your time is done, the red light comes on. Conduct that disrupts the meeting. For example, shouting or interrupting others' testimony or interrupting during council deliberations is not allowed. People who disrupt the meeting face ejection from the meeting. If there's a disruption, I'll issue a warning that if any further disruption occurs, anyone who's disrupting the meeting will be subject to ejection for the remainder of the meeting. Anyone who fails to leave the meeting after being ejected will be subject to arrest for a trespass. If you'd like to show your support for something, thumbs up, please. If you don't want to show your support, thumbs down. So with that, we'll get started. The first item is a time-certain item.
Item 388, accept the Portland Design Commission 2017 State of the City Design Report.
Commissioner Udaly.
Mayor and colleagues, it's a pleasure to introduce the Portland Design Commission's State of the City Design Report. The first item of business is to thank the dedicated volunteers who serve on that commission. This commission has met 3 times a month in 2016 and the first quarter of 2017, sometimes more pending retreats, appeals, or the state of the city that we're here for today. And often for many hours as they review land use cases and provide design advice. They're a dedicated, hardworking group that include David Wark, the chair, Tad Savinar, vice chair, Julie Livingston, Don Vallister, Jessica Molinaire, Andrew Clark, and Sam Rodriguez. Please all stand up so council can recognize you.
Thank you.
Thank you for your service. This commission will be presenting their 5th report before council, but they have been operating in the city of Portland since around 1980, providing leadership and expertise on urban design and architecture and on maintaining and enhancing Portland's historical and architectural heritage. This report comes to council at an important time for the city and its design overlay districts as development and construction is unprecedented in the history of design review. These neighborhoods deserve the appropriate protection and predictability of quality infill that meets our density goals and inevitable growth. I look forward to hearing more today from the commission members and interested public, and I'm committed to supporting the commission in all of its efforts. Commission Chair David Wark, please come forward with your presentation.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Welcome.
On. Thank you, Mr. Mayor, Commissioners. Thank you for giving us this audience to share with you what's been happening in our great city for the last year and about 3 months. So to start off, Portland, our little big city, is experiencing, as you said, Commissioner Udaly, experiencing perhaps the most dramatic changes in its history. People and businesses are moving and visiting here at a record pace, and new buildings are going up in every neighborhood in response. And this is what it feels like to most of us these days in most neighborhoods, a sense of hypergrowth. Fortunately, Portland, unlike many other American cities, has a plan for this growth called the Comprehensive 2035 Plan, and also a mechanism for guiding the quality of development, which is the Portland Design Commission and Design Review. And here are the seven current volunteers serving on the commission. Julie Livingston, project manager for Home Forward, focusing on affordable housing projects. Architect principal, Don Ballester, with the Ballester Coral Architecture Firm. Sam Rodriguez, who's our public at large member. He's a senior managing director for Mill Creek Residential Trust. Myself, David Warwick, I'm the RAC appointee, and I'm a principal with Henneberry Eddy Architects. Jessica Molinar, talented design architect with CoLab Architecture and Urban Design. Andrew Clark, the founder of Hue Development, focusing on Northeast infill residential projects. And Tad Savinar of Tad Savinar Studio, Urban Design. So where does design commission and design review in the type 3 zones in the city fall? In the central city, in the area in red, that's called the Central City District, downtown, South Waterfront, Pearl District, Conway, which is our newest district per se, Lloyd District and the Central East Side, and then the pink area to the right is the Gateway District. These are the areas in which the cases that come before us are constructed. And so,
I'm sorry to interrupt. Does somebody have a radio on?
I think it's outside.
Right. Okay, thank you. Okay.
All right. And so the primary purpose of design review and the commission is to help development in terms of planning documents, policies, buildings, to meet the larger goals of the city. And those goals are exemplified in the Central City Plan Design Goals. And they're the bookends of these goals. I'm not going to go through all of them, but the first one is just urban design excellence, the qualitative aspects of design. And four out of the next eight talk about the human condition, pedestrian experience, humanization, humane, and human scale. And it is through this lens, along with design guidelines, that we review projects. And I just wanted to kind of do a summary of what we've been experiencing, what we've been seeing, what's been coming before us. And they break out into about three different types of categories. We've approved seven significant public projects. On the upper left is the Knight Cancer Research Building. Next to that is the Center for Health and Healing South. Multnomah County is just starting their new large health building near the train station. And the Multnomah County Courthouse is being proposed. I think they've started broken ground at the Hawthorne Bridgehead. And maybe just a pause for a moment in remembrance of the VQ that was on that site. And so the lower left is the Oregon Convention Center Hotel, which is the largest hotel in Portland, a public-private joint venture. The PSU Stott Center, the basketball pavilion on the campus and the park blocks. And then the new PSU School of Business, which is under construction also.
Can I just make a comment?
Commissioner, your microphone's, something's wrong.
Just a quick comment on the picture of the Multnomah County Health Department building.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And you described it as being near the train station. Of course, at the city, we say it's near Bud Clark Commons.
Oh, sure.
But
right.
The reason
okay.
we say that, and Julie is smiling, is
right.
that Bud Clark Commons won the award as the best designed a building of its kind given by HUD. And originally, Bud Clark Commons was designed to be a suburban-style building that filled the whole lot. And it was, in fact, a couple of designers and developers who said, that's not urban form. And so it was redesigned and restacked as a half-block urban form building, which freed up the other half for the health department building. So
right.
I think another example of good design thinking
right.
informing opportunities.
And you can see the corner of that building to the right of the county health building in the image there. The next type of projects we've seen are just a jump in scale, some in height, others in area, some occupying four city blocks, and one actually occupying 33 acres in the South Waterfront. The Lloyd District on the upper left is a 5-1 with 689 apartment units. Perhaps the most densified section of the city is this four blocks of Oregon Square in Lloyd Center. Burnside Bridgehead has a bookend to the Yards project at 5th MLK. And in the upper right is the Zidell Shipyard, which will, when fully built out, include 2,600 apartments, 1.5 million square feet of office space, and meaningful recreation access to the Willamette River. And then the others on the bottom are in the Pearl and downtown, except in Sleepy Goose Hollow on the bottom right, a 250-foot tower on the former Oregonian press blocks is proposed. So we're seeing change, as I said, in every neighborhood. And this may not be much of a surprise to anyone, but by far the most common project type that we reviewed is the mixed-use housing type. In every part of the central city and gateway, 33 projects in total with just over 4,000 apartment units. And you can see the diversity of that type of architecture, which we'll refer to in a little bit relative to the guidelines.
Do you know offhand how many are in Gateway?
I'm sorry, what?
Do you know offhand how many of those projects are in Gateway?
Well, there are more than the one upper left is the one pictured, but there are three others.
Great,
but
thank
I didn't
you.
Show every project.
No,
otherwise, we'd be looking at we couldn't discern what they are.
It's just a question for information, not a criticism.
Yeah.
Thank you.
This is more for effect, just the scale of the projects, the number. And then the next project type, affordable housing. Out of those 33 mixed-use housing projects, five included affordable units. And of the 4,000-plus units that are in those projects, 482 were affordable units, or approximately 12% of our new apartments or living units were affordable housing units. Two of those are, let me start by saying the one in the middle is actually partly a design commission result of the Broadway Tower behind it, which was identified as a public benefit associated with that project. So the second phase of the Broadway Tower project actually includes affordable housing units that were part of that public benefit to give them more FAR and height. And so, which brings us to the design guidelines. And when we kind of saw the variety of architecture that's been proposed, that's a result of the design guidelines, which are intended to be flexible in how they're met. And they do not prescribe us a specific type or style of architecture. And I'd like to dig into two guidelines that will illustrate how they help shape significant projects in the city. And the first is contribute to a vibrant streetscape, and the second is about context. And as Jane Jacobs said, streets and their sidewalks, the main public places of a city, are its most vital organs. And so just to give you a sense of what the city was, where it was headed before design review, this is the character of many blocks in our city in the pre-1980 era, where there were very blank, lifeless corners and anti-pedestrian areas marked by the automobile. So, what happened there? Out of memory. Sure what that means. We have a technical person. Just when I was rolling, too, you know. Well, I don't know what happened there, but it didn't download the whole thing or something. She came in earlier and downloaded it. All right. Okay, and then view. Okay, we'll catch up here. There we go. So, okay, here we go, starting back up. So this was pre-design review and design commission, and this is post-design review design commission, which transformed something that was very unengaging, very removed, very anti-pedestrian to something that is now pedestrian-centric and something we almost take for granted these days, that this is what our city is going to continue to build. And so when we have this was for a project at 13th Avenue in Overton, large 250-foot high rise, which in and of itself was probably fine, but related to contribute to a vibrant streetscape. That being a primary guideline, this project still proposed something much different than that. And what it proposed was basically an auto court drop-off area and driveway that also did not have any active streetscape, storefront, active ground floor use. And so after helping point out that this was actually a guideline that we would like them to follow, giving them advice on how to change that their approach and the first floor, that what was the former automobile court in this area then became retail, a nice small kind of recessed courtyard for major entrance, and then on this corner, another area for retail and active use, and then tucking in a garage entrance within the building form itself. And so what came out of that was what was going to be auto-centric and obviously not a part of the guidelines now is on its first floor one of the more successful projects in the Pearl District relative to access and openness to live-work units, individual housing units, and while it's not in this picture, that is the retail to the right there. The second example of application of the guidelines is a project at 4th and Harrison, which was proposed to take advantage of a massive amount of FAR and bonus height. I'm not sure it did the bonus height, but definitely FAR. And it abuts a very important historic a place that's on the National Register of Historic Places in the city, the new Halperin Open Space Sequence District, and which probably was perhaps one of the most important and influential urban landscapes of the 20th century, and therefore deserving of its listing on the National Register. And so that little red square is the site in each of these diagrams. And so relative to massing and context, the proposal came in. This is Pettigrove Park at that northeast corner. It came in with a lot of bulk associated with that corner, robbing this park of its natural light and space, and also not setting back from it like the other buildings in that district. So after that first DAR, we offered up our comments on how they could better respond to the park. This was their second DAR, which was only a sliver of maybe movement in this area relative to our remarks about how to treat that historic district. And then they finally began shaving off some of their bonus FAR, and then we encouraged them to continue in this direction. And then the final design actually is an L-shaped building with active use on this lower level and then kind of townhouse band above that. So much improved building overall, and definitely a much better response to what is a very important open space in our city's history. And this
Could
is
Could I
the
ask rent- you a question?
Sure.
Could you go back? And here's where I always just sort of have some questions. And I trust your judgment, but the difference obviously between the first and the second, the third and fourth is obvious.
Sure.
From a design guideline perspective, what's the difference between the third and the fourth? When you looked at the third,
sure.
And you said that's not quite right.
Right.
What is it you're seeing there?
Right, right. Well, it was in comparison to the other buildings around it also, where there is much more open space and breathing room. And set back from what I would call the kind of east and the north property lines. The Cyan was right over here, which is a building about the same height, which is really just a bar that is parallel to 4th Avenue over here. And so we just felt that since we were talking about bonus FAR and not the base FAR, that they were able to better respond to, I think, light and air and open space.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, sure. And the other guideline, won't get too deep in the weeds here, but there is the other guideline that talks about enhance, embellish, and identify areas reflecting the local character within the within that district. So there's more than one that went into that.
I appreciate that.
Sure.
Thank you.
And this is kind of the result where I think most everyone came away pretty satisfied with the result of this process. I think you will hear that from someone that you will recognize their name that is going to read a letter to that effect. So some of our accomplishments, in addition to meeting as often as we are now, and review, we review and comment on such planning documents as the mixed-use zone, residential infill planning document, the Central City 2035 comprehensive plan, the design overlay zone assessment program that has been in the works for about a year, and I think you'll get a briefing on that within the next week or two. And then we've also mediated solutions with PBOT and other stakeholders relative to trying to help applicants get through the process much easier. Some archaic or otherwise, I guess, impediments to getting approved earlier. We've kind of flushed out many of those, including what you would think would be kind of a basic kind of thing as a cover in a utility vault, and that being basically negotiated over a year and a half of an acceptable utility vault. Parking garage entrance doors, there's a condition where PBOT preferred to have the door set back 20 feet so that a car could queue up and when it going in, so it wouldn't block the sidewalk. However, that sets up a very unappealing urban condition of a 20-foot dark hole on every block where every garage door would be. So finally recognized that there are doors called speed doors out there, and so that allowed the door to come out to the sidewalk and satisfy that condition and also satisfy PBOT's need to get cars in and out of buildings quicker. These are very, very detailed issues, but they become significant impediments in terms of time and money for applicants. So we very much try to work with that within that system and change it. The Arcade District also had a major encroachment process that added 6 months to projects if they wanted to meet the guideline, which we encouraged, which is to build over the sidewalk in that Arcade District. So that was eliminated through negotiations with PBOT and through a former commissioner. Have worked on public identifying public benefit for projects that ask for extra FAR in height. The Broadway Tower is an example I cited a few minutes ago, in which additional affordable housing units were part of the deal, along with funding for the study and improvement of the parks blocks that immediately east of that second phase project. And we also authored the best practices document, which has been retitled A Guide to the City's Portland Design Review Process, which outlines many aspects of the process that that gives insight into applicants on how to better but more easily get through the design review process and expectations of the design commission relative to different topics. And we can go into that in a little more detail if you'd like. But basically, it gives them the current views and expectations of the design commission. And then in terms of design advice, and with our pay scale, you can consider this free advice. And so one of the things that we've been working on with DOZA also is to simplify the design guidelines. And that might occur under these kind of five or so headings: under context, massing, active ground floor use, quality in terms of design quality of ideas and also of materials, and perhaps a sustainability guideline in some way. Consider a minimum development threshold. We're seeing a lot of projects that are underbuilding in our already crowded city, and as each site builds upon itself in an underutilized way, it just puts more pressure on another site. So that's just something to consider in the future. Also establish a comprehensive strategy for truck loading and service. We're also seeing larger projects which require larger more number of loading bays. So that takes up more space in a building's facade, which then hands that over to a less active space that then minimizes or reduces the amount of active space on a block. And as we get more of those, we lose the activity on the street that's so critical. The idea of creating a citizen academy to be more inclusive and provide information to neighborhoods and individuals about how to participate in the process. And then the Arcade District, as we stated before, there is a guideline that requests applicants and their designers to build over the right-of-way as part of that historic expansion of Burnside. There is a lease fee associated with building over the right-of-way, which to us doesn't seem fair that the city asks people to build over the right-of-way and then charges them for it. and also to simplify that agreement between the city and the owner. That has been a thorn in the side of applicants because the rate of that lease often tilts it in an unfavorable light relative to their pro forma.
Specific to the East Burnside District, or is that in
general?
That's
just the Arcade District, right.
Right.
Because the others, you can do a major encroachment elsewhere, but that's still that long process. But for the Arcade District, because we're asking the applicants to design over it, the impediments and the burden to do that should be removed.
I agree. It feels like we're playing on both sides
Yes.
of that equation.
Right, exactly. And it took a while to just parse out the issues when applicants would come in and be very reluctant to do that when it's such a positive aspect. They can actually gain square footage, but they didn't want to do it. And so as we dug into it, we kind of figured out that, oh, here's the problem.
Well, and we want to keep your process clean. And,
right.
and when there's a financial incentive to potentially design them in that direction, it doesn't look good.
Right. Agreed. Right. And so these recommendations will help clarify, simplify, and streamline the review process for design teams. It would be a process that is more accessible to the public, listens more closely to neighbors and applicants, is fair, and is more predictable. In other words, a process with legitimacy. It will result in better buildings and an even more active pedestrian realm, while helping us realize that the Portland we have prescribed in our 2035 comprehensive plan. And then I want to much enthusiasm kind of end on this note about design excellence. And periodically a project comes before a design commission that truly stands out among its peers. And the framework truly impressed the design commission. It embodies everything design review is seeking, including a meaningful expression of that often head-scratching guideline emphasized Portland themes. In this case, themes of creativity, innovation, and social responsibility. To begin with, the framework is an exceptional design that openly embraces the pedestrian realm with a significant amount of glazing and canopies. It also incorporates a public community room and terrace on the second floor, contributing more life and energy to the streetscape. The exterior facades have depth and interest and are composed of a high quality and well-detailed metal panel system. It neither needed nor requested special consideration from the city or the design commission during the review process, instead relying on the experience and creative talents of their project team, which included co-developers Project and Home Forward, Lever Architects, KPFF Engineers, and Walsh Construction. Secondly, Framework is an affordable housing project located in the Pearl District, which we all know is expensive real estate, addressing our city's urgent need to house our most vulnerable citizens. Framework represents itself as a confident addition to the Pearl, offering a dignified home for its residents. And finally, Framework incorporates an emerging sustainable construction technology, CLT, or cross-laminated timber construction, made from a renewable resource and one of Oregon's most abundant resources, which is trees, and specifically Douglas fir. When completed, Framework will be the tallest wood building in the United States constructed with CLT technology, which will be manufactured in Oregon, a watershed movement for our state's timber industry and its evolution into a 21st century industry. For these reasons, exceptional design, specifically raising the level of design for affordable housing, and innovation with potential far-reaching impacts to Oregon's economy, the Portland Design Commission is pleased to present its first ever Design Excellence Award to Framework. And in closing, if I might, as our little big city continues to attract more and more new residents and we continue building to accommodate them, high quality and innovative design becomes an imperative if we are to achieve higher density while also enhancing the livability of our urban environment. At a deeper level, for us to hold on to the essence of Portland. And design review in partnership with visionary planning will help us achieve this. So thank you. So
thank you.
Going to go to the next one. There we are. So if you have any comments, questions, or otherwise, I'd be glad to address those for you.
Comments or questions, anybody?
Usually, or often in this report, you reflect back on some of the accomplishments of things that have been on the list for a long time.
Right.
And I'm wondering, were there any landmark processes that fulfilled that for the Design Commission this year? this past year.
That brought up I'm sorry, I didn't quite.
Well, I'm thinking, for instance, of the Skidmore design guidelines,
sure.
which you asked us on multiple occasions or multiple years in a row to adopt, and we finally got through that process.
Right.
I think that was the year before last. Was there anything else that had been on the Design Commission's to-do list?
Well, I think one of the to-do lists was to actually have the study for the design overlay zone assessment. I mean, that uncovered a lot of aspects to Design Commission that we recognized could improve by Design Commission and Design Review, whether it's with the Commission or with staff under the Type 2 process. So I think that's a real positive step for everyone. And I think you'll hear this, but we had a briefing last Thursday that everyone recognizes the contributions of the design review process, whether it be with Design Commission or staff, and that our city is no accident the way it's in its present form. It's through a deliberate series of decisions that started about 1980. And that's why our city is very special and why people come here in droves to experience it, because it has such a specialness to it. And so with that, it also has issues that we could improve upon. And as I think to every person associated with it, whether it's staff or the design commissioners, we're committed to improving the process for everyone, as long as the qualitative aspects of it remain intact.
Well, right. Thank you very much
sure.
for your work over the whole okay. committee commission. Right. I'm wondering, you mentioned that you were involved in the comprehensive plan.
Right.
Did the design commission feel that their advice was respected and incorporated into the comprehensive plan?
Yeah, it's such a huge and complex document. But yes, we had several briefings with them and felt we were pretty much heard. I think there's still a couple of little things about that we presented last time about active use. Housing is active use everywhere or not. And I think we pointed out some of those examples in 2015 at our State of the Design report. So, but overall, yeah, I think it's a solid document. Same with the mixed use zone, which is was extremely well received by Design Commission and will be very impactful relative to projects that are outside of the D overlay zone. It just sets up a new standard of quality expectations and of density. And so that once that's implemented, that will start to, I think, really gain traction in the outer areas, the outer neighborhoods. Yeah.
Thank you.
Right.
I have a question.
Sure.
So we get some criticism from time to time about the quality of affordable housing in parts of the state. And generally, it is...
Sorry, Commissioner, your mic's not on.
Oh, it's the mute thing again.
Sorry. And generally, in my experience, it's private sector housing, like in East Portland, that was designed to last about 15 years without any sense of how it integrates with the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And by contrast, we get virtually no pushback from some of the beautifully designed affordable housing stuff that's going in now in Gateway and Lentz
right.
and other things. There might be a debate about who we're serving and location, but the design is an enhancement. So I think we all agree that you can have deeply affordable housing that's beautifully designed, and you can meet both goals. I'm struck that you've given your first award to an affordable housing development
right.
that Home Forward has been a party to.
Right.
And Home Forward serves the very poorest people in our community, so they'll have as many 0 to 30 units as they can afford there.
Right.
So with that in mind, the debate we've had over the last couple of years is how to cut red tape to get more production. And the area where I think developers have probably gotten the most traction is to somehow cut red tape, including design commission review, of projects that serve low-income people. And so there's the specter that we're going to see a degradation of design and quality.
Right, right.
So what is the state of that question? And, I mean, here you are. You're giving an award to a project that shows that you can continue to have
right.
high-quality design and deeply affordable. But since there's a tension
right.
and we're being told to get more affordable housing out the door, we have to cut red tape, and design review is an area where there's
right.
been efforts to either right. bypass you or streamline.
Sure.
What is the state of that question?
Well, I would yes, obviously that's affordable housing project, and that makes it even more remarkable. I will say that project would have gotten through on the first hearing if it weren't for an issue with the Bureau of Environmental Services. And it actually...
I had to call out my bureau.
Right. Oh, is that it? Sorry. Right. Well, since I'm talking to you, you know.
Yeah. Would sorry be sufficient?
No, because it didn't really have that much of an impact on it.
It was actually a Water Bureau problem, but they passed the buck.
Probably, right. And so that can be part of the problem, is parsing out when it's design review and when it's interagency approvals and coordination. So that's it's such a long process, and design review is a small part of the overall process in terms of time. We dug up some numbers because of trying to understand what the time delays might be. And so by law, unless the applicant files for an extension, there's a 120-day fast track that has to occur. You have to be done in 120 days. On average, I think all these projects were at 103 days. So you're always going to have projects that get through less than that and some that get through more than that. And there are a series of factors that you can probably guess what they are. It's whether or not a team comes in fully embracing the process instead of trying to maybe do a workaround. You know, what are their what's their pro forma? What is their mission? I think that it's kind of dangerous to identify one mission above others when we've got so many important issues relative to our city. So those are some of the things that we've been kind of kicking around.
Well, I'll just say, speaking for myself, when I take visitors into the River District and I ask, which has some of the highest concentration of deeply affordable housing in the city, and I ask them to identify the affordable housing,
right,
more often than not, they can't.
Can't, right.
And I hope that is a value that in Portland we continue to honor,
right,
that we believe good design and affordable housing can go hand in hand, and we shouldn't sacrifice the one for the other.
Agreed. And these are really long-term investments. And so everyone's been in a building that isn't that well-maintained, and one that is, and one that's easier to maintain, and one that isn't. And so... The smallest cost of a building is actually building it. The largest cost over time is the energy use and its maintenance. So these are long-term decisions that have really significant impacts.
Great.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there any public testimony on this item?
Were you calling up Tim? Were you going to call the other people up first? Or okay. Will do. I think we have about 12 people signed up. The first three, please come on up, are John Carroll, Phil Bell, and Tiffany Schweitzer.
Good afternoon and welcome. Name for the record, please. We don't need anybody's address. And at 2:30 in, you see the yellow light go crazy. 3 minutes, okay. The red light goes crazy.
Shut up.
I didn't say that.
I will.
Very good. Whoever would like to start.
Go ahead.
I'm John Carroll. I'm a developer.
They had to be late green.
Push.
Thank you.
Okay.
There you go. Yeah, it's good. Good to go.
Again, I'm John Carroll. I'm a developer, developing exclusively here in Portland for the last 20-plus years. I've been involved... at the request of, at the time, Commissioner Blumenauer, to give him 3 months to talk about streetcars. I've been at it now for 23 years, and you put that, the transportation and the infrastructure in a community, and you put that in the context of creating a city, creating appropriate housing, working on increasing the quality of the community through the design review process. That has been my background, and I can tell you that I have been very, very pleased with how the city, over time, over the last 23, 24 years, has really taken the leadership in keeping the development community, myself, of course, Tiffany can address that as well, but it kept me focused on whatever building we've looked at, whatever building we've designed. We wanted to bring it to the commission. We wanted to get through the process, but we also wanted a building and create an environment that when you're walking down the street, you want people to say, how did they build that building? Wow, that feels good. What's this all about? And that, I think that is a theme that, from our development perspective, we tried to utilize over the years. The whole design review process, people will tell me they complain about it, but I'm very pleased and very comfortable with the process. David Wark is our last project. I'd never had a conversation with him directly before that, but he brought some perspective, and we created a better building, and I think the city's going to be proud of it. And I can't compliment the commission right now that much, or maybe I'm complimenting too much, but they are helping create a city that is safe, that is walkable, that is livable, that is enjoyable, and all of those things. I have evolved. I've been, as I said, involved with Streetcar for 20 plus years. I'm now the chairman of First Stop Portland, which has communities come from all over the world to look at Portland. And they ask invariably the questions, whether they're from Sweden or Adelaide, Australia, or wherever they are, come around the world, how did Portland do it? And telling the story through the commission and design review process is very, very important. Next month, we have 145 people from Denver, Colorado, that want to come and find out how Portland's doing it. I've just gotten an invitation from Andalusia, Spain, to go and talk to their communities about how you develop infrastructure, how you develop communities with density. And so I can say, as my time is running out, that I think the process is very good here. I compliment the staff, which I've worked with for many years, and I appreciate having been involved with that process. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Good afternoon. My name is Phil Bile. I'm the president of GBD Architects. Thanks for having the chance to come and testify you in front of Mayor Wheeler and members of the City Council. I wrote you all a nice letter, so instead of trying to ad lib it, I'm going to read it to you very quickly. It's a 3-minute letter, I promise. My company, GBD, has been practicing architecture in Portland Central City since 1969. We've completed literally hundreds of projects, small to large, that have navigated the design review process before moving forward to construction. We presented our projects to virtually every design commission since the first one was formed in 1982. We're actively engaged today with the commission. We have 6 major projects that are under review right now, so my point is we're pretty familiar with the process. While a lot has changed during that 35 years of history with the process, some elements haven't, one of which is our respect for the volunteer commissioners who graciously give their time to protect our built environment. They've always been charged with a very, very challenging task, which is to be the final judge and jury in what qualifies for quality in our built environment. This can be a daunting task, highly subjective in nature, and oftentimes substantiated by opinion rather than fact. Does the process work? I think I can say, in my own opinion and many of my peers, absolutely yes, it works. I'm going to borrow a quote from the upcoming Dozer report, which I think you guys are going to review next week, which is to say that there is no question that design review has had a central role in guiding the high-quality development that Portland is known for today. I couldn't agree more with that, and it very simply describes my opinion as well. But as aspirational as the design community might want to be about being completely in control of the design qualities of our projects, there is a very powerful force out there that is often pushing back every step of the way, demanding that we build our projects bigger, build them faster, build them taller, and build them cheaper. Design review is one of the very few tools that we have to push back against and resist those forces. Design review gives us the very distinct advantage that we often need to push our projects to meet a benchmark of quality that the market by itself would not otherwise achieve. Could the process be improved? Of course it can. Every process can. In fact, I've had a chance to thoroughly review the Dozer report that you will be seeing, and I think there's some very good work in there. And there's actually very little in the report that I would take exception to, some terrific ideas that could be implemented. But let me be clear, design review is not broken. If anything, it's overwhelmed. Never in my 40 years of practice here have we seen the intensity of development that we still are very much in the middle of here in Portland. The impact has been a sudden transformation of our neighborhoods, bringing big city challenges that stretch far beyond how best to design our built environment. Will the intensity subside anytime soon? I don't think so. I think demographics are telling us otherwise. We've created a very livable city, and people are attracted to it. Looks like I'm done. I'm sorry.
That was very good.
Okay. Thank you.
You're a good reader, too.
I'm not a fast reader.
That was well done. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me. I suspect I was asked here today because I've taken quite a few projects through design review. My 14th project just went through the city, the process.
Could you state your name for the record?
Oh, that would help.
Sorry.
Okay. Yeah. Tiffany Schweitzer, Hoyt Street Properties. I apologize, Commissioner. And on top of that, Hoyt Street has also taken through two master plans that also went to design review, as well as increasing FAR from 2-1 to 9-1 and unlimited height when we were limited to 75 feet 20 years ago. And so I agree with both Phil and John. The process is very good. I do think it works. I do think it can be frustrating at times. But I think overall, the commission does a very good job. Countless hours that they spend that they don't necessarily get the credit for. And I usually go away with something better than I came in with. What I've seen lately, and to Phil's point of so much projects being shown and going through the pipeline, is a lot of people that are ill-prepared. They come into whether it's DAR or design review, and they're in a rush to get their project through for whatever reason, be it cost or timing or trying to get around some amendments that may be in the pipeline. And what I've seen sitting there as I'm waiting for my own turn is not a lot of thought given, not the same thought that we're asking Design Commission to give. People don't take the time to think about all of the things John described, what really makes a neighborhood, what does it feel like at the street level, how does transportation work with it. And so I think that's where design review really comes in and is very effective, because they're thinking not just of the building but how it works for everything else around it. And I think it is an important tool that we need in this city. And I've had quite a lot of success with this commission as well as others in the past. And I suspect that will continue as long as, you know, we care about the city that I think the three of us here do. And I think the commission does as well. So I appreciate them spending, you know, many hours listening to all of the progress that's happening in our city. Thank you.
Thank you. Could I just ask one question? You said design review is not broken, but you said it was overwhelmed. Are there some concrete steps we could take to alleviate that in the near term?
Well, it's a daunting challenge all by itself because we're in such an unusual period in our economy. It's terrific for Portland in many, many ways, but it's also pretty detrimental to Portland and others. The changes there are several of them that are listed in the report, one of which is to, for example, add a second commission so that we could expand the number of people who are able to review the cases that are coming through so quickly. What we ask of staff of the commission is unbelievable. They spend 3 to 4 days of their month, every single month, upwards of 8 to 10 hours at each commission hearing reviewing these cases, and it's not slowing down. We're beating them up, and they need relief.
So here's a question I wanted to ask with regard to that specific recommendation. So you asked a provocative question. You asked the question, what does the community look like? And there's some subjectivity to that. So my question is this. If we took your commission, which presumably has its own history, its own culture, its own norms that are established within the context of the design review standards, if we created a completely different commission to take up the slack, if you will, do you think they would be looking at the projects the same way? Would they have the same outcomes that your commission has, or is there a particular culture to the commission?
Oh, I think we could expect that there would be some strong alignment, and it would really be incumbent upon the staff to communicate that consistency between the different commissions. It would really be detrimental for the two to take divisive roles and look at projects differently than one another. It would be very, very counterproductive.
Right. Or have different standards. You
yes.
don't want one
yeah.
commission to be seen as the one that you want to draw as opposed to the other one.
Well, there's certainly the opportunity for different standards to happen outside the central city, standards that are a little bit more appropriate to outlying neighborhoods, and certainly a different commission that is well-versed in those criteria could be very, very successful and serve as a second commission.
Thank you. And I apologize. I don't typically ask questions because you raised some really interesting issues.
Sure.
I appreciate that.
Very, very quickly, the next committee you'd form would be an arbitration committee if you created two commission mechanisms. And that would, my take is that would slow the process down further.
I agree.
Don, I have a quick question for you. I've been on the council since 2000. We're actually starting to get more appeals of design commission decisions to council. I'm not sure that's a good thing, partly because...
Your microphone, Commissioner Saul.
My understanding, Commissioner, is that we can leave them on the whole time, and they've got this new technology that it does. They figure out if you're talking or not.
There's actually, I've been pushing this button on the stem of to turn it on.
I think I'll finally get the hang of it by the end of the year.
Different strategies.
I'm sorry, but we've had a few appeals in the last year, and frankly, the rules allow for it. I'm not sure it's a great thing, in part because of all the land use things we do, I find it in some way the hardest because it has the most discretion. It has the most subjectivity. I mean, you know, other land use stuff we do is heavily prescribed, and the lawyers are walking us through each of the criteria. So any thoughts on why we're getting more and then how we can perhaps reverse that trend? Because just speaking for myself, I don't want to be the city council that on a regular basis has the final say on that because I don't think it's the best use of our time, and I'm not sure we're the best equipped body to make those judgments, just my view.
Two quick things. One, the appeal process is picking up because you have what I would describe as more out-of-towners coming to Portland, Oregon. I'm going to get this project. We're going to get it through the commission. We're going to get it built, and we're going to sell it and flip and make some money. I mean, that's one of the mindsets that I'm starting to see. And Tiffany, you might chime in on that. I think that an appeal process is important because if it's something that's grave and it's just horrible, then I think it needs to be dealt with. But I would tend to give the commission a little bit stronger hand in that in terms of making those decisions final and not have to kick it up to the commission level.
That's an important point.
It's about whether we view ourselves as de novo and we start doing the design thing and what level of deference we give. And whether our job is to make sure there hasn't been some significant procedural lapse versus casually substituting our judgment for some big design question.
I agree. Just the parting comment, there was a project I was in here while somebody brought an appeal to the council many years ago, and I forget who said it, but this person said, well, you know, where I come from, this is in the... And the council member at the time said, do you know what city you're in now? And he shut up. And I thought we have to, you know, our fingerprints around the world, around the United States are becoming more greater and greater as we continue to grow well and grow smart and on and on.
Thank you. Next three, please. Thank you, Jim. Thank you.
Are John Russell, Tad Savinar, and Julie Livingston.
Call one other person. I think John Russell is appearing by letter. Oh, you're John Russell?
I'm going to do my best to be John Russell, but I am Tim Herron with the Bureau of Development Services, and I can start if you would like.
Jump
great.
In. Thank you.
Thank you. John asked me to read this. Unfortunately, he's in San Francisco on office, on business, and really felt it important that this be read into the record. It's less than 3 minutes. If you don't know who John Russell is, I kind of asked him to coach it himself because it's hard to describe John Russell. but relative to this matter, John, let me know. I'm not sure anyone has more experience than I've had, starting with 8 years on the Landmarks Commission, 4 years on the Planning Commission, and 3 years on the Development Commission as chair. I also served as chair of the Mayor's Business Roundtable for 10 years with former Mayor Vera Katz. So with that, I will read his letter. Gentle persons, I have a vested interest in the success of design review because it was my idea when I was a member of the Portland Planning Commission. The project that stirred us to action was the building now known as the Congress Center, which in our opinion failed its responsibilities at the pedestrian level. At that time, we members of the Planning Commission had only three criteria for approval: height, floor area ratio, and parking. I believe then, and I believe even more now, that in order to make certain that buildings will last for a century and more are credits and more are credits to the city, we need a more subjective level of scrutiny. I've seen some wonderful examples of input by the Design Review Commission that resulted in dramatically better projects. In particular, the campus housing project at 4th and Harrison initially turned its back on the Pettigrove Park. Commissioner Warwick talked about that project earlier. In the course of several hearings, the building improved to the satisfaction of everyone, even, I believe, the developers. Having said that, no matter how well a regulatory statute is written, there are inevitably exceptions that don't fit the rules. In the case of design review, I don't believe there are sufficient exceptions in the statutes that could save both the applicants and the city significant time and money. As a recent example, we are spending $1.5 million on the reconstruction of the tenant improvements inside the Cushman & Wakeman office on the terrace level of the 200 Market building. We considered recessing the doors to the outer terraces some 18 inches. Had we done so, we would have been subject to design review, and thereby the project would have delayed for a minimum of 8 weeks. We and the design review staff agreed that the change was both de minimis and invisible to the public, but the staff had no authority to approve it. In my opinion, city staff needs to be empowered to make common sense judgments about the applicability of certain codes. The safeguard, I believe, is that staff's decision, although final at the time it is made, would need to be sent out via notice to the same group of neighbors who would receive notification as part of the normal process. In closing, I know most of the members of the Design Commission and I admire each of them. The city owes them personally a great deal of thanks for the many hours of volunteer time devoted to make our city a better place.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. My name is Tad Savinar. I'm the Vice Chair of the Design Commission currently. David Warwick likes to tell the story of visiting Portland many times during the 70s and the 80s before he ultimately decided to move here in 1988. And he moved here, as he tells the story, specifically because of its architecture and its built urban environment. He has been the chair of this commission for 2.5 years. He has served on the commission for 9 years. The role of the chair is part traffic cop, part city attorney, part architect, part historian, part mediator, part rally squad, and many other parts. When I came back from college in 1973 to my hometown of Portland, I decided that I would give a third of my time in volunteer services, which I have done up until this day. And during that commitment to my city, I've sat on a lot of panels and task forces and committees, and I've seen a lot of chairs and leaders and facilitators. Never have I seen a citizen volunteer so even-handed, so accurate, so visionary, so considerate, and so thorough. The city and its citizens have been fortunate to have a uniquely qualified individual participate and ultimately lead the Design Commission. And I wanted to acknowledge this as a peer, but I wanted to acknowledge it in front of you in this room today. We have many thanks for David Warwick. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My name is Julie Livingston, and I have just a few comments to make this afternoon that may not rise to the same level as Tad's. Thank you, Tad. The first is I wanted to follow up on a point that David made in his presentation. The DOZA report makes a recommendation that we roll out something akin to a Citizens Academy. When you receive the DOZA materials next week, you'll see a recommendation that we better communicate the role of urban design and the D overlay tool. And DOZA actually recommends that we do this through improving the public information and education process, and that we also hold applicant orientations on a regular basis. So this is going to be one of the big goals of the design review staff and design